Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff. It's our friend Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy, because Sarah's running the board today. That's who you'll speak to instead of Jasmine. Everyone's filling in for somebody today. Welcome to the show. Dane, thank you for being here. Always fun to have you.
Thanks for having me. And as advertised, Bill, you are filling in for yourself.
Yes, so I'm going to try
there's
to.
There's no substitute available or needed or even comparable,
you.
Right?
But still, for people who keep score, everybody buys a scorecard before the show. You like to fill in who's at what position.
Absolutely.
I'm at my own position.
A lot
today.
Of people feverishly scribbling right now.
Right. Although, as an added bonus to the listener, normally I sit where you are, the co-host seat, and Wendy runs the board. And now I'm running the board, which means that literally anything can happen. Because sometimes I just hit buttons at random just because it's a pretty color button.
Just falls into this. This is a day to watch online, then.
Yes, it is.
Bill's running the board.
Watch online. And even bet with loved ones as to how long we can right. go without a huge crucial error.
I think it just falls into the keeping it fresh category.
like when you sit at the baseball game and bet on whether the ball will stop on the mound. With
yes.
The yeah.
That sort of thing. Uh-huh. It's just it adds an extra layer of fun is what it does. That's
like
all.
I'd say two layers.
I have a confession to make. At the beginning of the season, I said, and I have done this every year for the past, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years. I watch the first Bears game of the season, and then I make my decision on whether or not I will watch any more Bears games that season. This year, I watched opening day as they lost to the Green Bay Packers.
But there was some promise in the first half,
there
though.
Was a lot of promise in the yeah. first half. But I ended the game saying, I can't do this to myself anymore. It hurts my heart to watch this team year after year after year either blow big leads or get blown out or just disappoint us. I can't watch. I can't do it. Why would anyone do it, I said.
Well, Bill, you have, and I think for the listeners that know that you give up sugar once a year, you make some decision you have, I think, in the two words, it's steely resolve, right?
That's, yes, thank you.
And you think about those promises in that first half of that game on that first night, and then there were some broken promises,
right.
too, and you don't want to be hurt again.
Right.
That's painful.
That's what it comes down to. Did you ever have a relationship with somebody where you get burned time and time again and you say, why do I keep going back? This is obviously not meant to be. That's my relationship with the Bears. And during that first game, I wanted so badly for this to be the season that things would be different. And then I kept looking at that mustache that Trubisky's trying to grow and it's not quite working. And I say, that's a perfect analogy for what the Bears season will be. I can't do this. Well, I'm here to say I was wrong. I watched last night. It's the first game I've watched since opening day. I watched last night because it was in primetime, and I was very impressed with what I saw.
Well, here's the thing. I think win or lose, and they've lost some close games too, they're just a lot of fun to watch. You know, this is the kind of team, and for the listeners of the Saturday show on the road, we had Sean Gale on, of course, part of the 85 Bears, greatest Bears team, greatest, one of the greatest defenses of all time, an exciting team to watch. And we've said, you know, for the last few years, the most exciting or fun or rewarding part of a Bears Sunday was the tailgate, right?
Sure.
But this team, I mean, you want to get out there and see them because they, on the defensive side, and certainly Khalil Mack, I mean, they're so much pressure.
Yeah.
They're just creating so much chaos. They're intercepting passes,
yes.
running them back. You know, and then you've got on the other side, you've got, you know, an offensive coach in Nagy, and you've got Trubisky. I mean, it's only 2 years in. You want to say, I'm quoting, you know, coming into his own.
But you can see it happening.
The running game. I mean, they've got all the pieces, really.
Yeah. So I just want to go on record as saying, for people who got mad at me.
Are you back?
I'm not fully back. I'm still afraid, like now once I've been sucked in, that they're going to go, we got you, and then there's something horrible is going to happen. I hope that's not the case. I would like to see them go deep into the playoffs. But here's the question. And until last night, I only see this on highlight reels, but last night I saw it play out. When they score, now for a while in the NFL, once you scored a touchdown, you couldn't do anything crazy. It was excessive celebration.
It
you got
as though
a,
there
you got
was
a penalty.
Celebration crackdown.
Yeah,
right?
I think they were very adamant for reasons I still don't understand. I guess it was to save time. That's all I could imagine. Why would the NFL not want to show guys be happy after they score?
I mean, it may have been the official reason is, you know, time constraints.
I don't know.
Or it was unsportsmanlike conduct. So maybe they were considering the feelings. It's one thing to watch the scoreboard change. That certainly impacts your psyche. But then when you watch an orchestrated, you know, kind of production based around your failure.
Well,
maybe that was it.
Right. But that, all right. So that's exactly what I want to bring up is I've now seen in the limited amount of time that I've watched Bears games this season, I have seen them pretend that they are posing for a team photograph with one guy standing in front being a photographer and the rest of the team posing for a team photograph. I've seen them pretend to be paddling a canoe the guys all sit like one guy in front of the other in front of the other, and then they have canoes that they move. What was the one I saw? Oh, the band was last night, where they had a band conductor stand in front of the other bears, and they all pretend to play flutes and piccolos and trombones and bongos and stuff. So with something that's that orchestrated, they must rehearse that, right?
Yeah, and
that
and
just doesn't have, they don't just go, hey, we all have the same idea at the same time, let's pretend we're an orchestra.
Impossible. You know, and I know that they don't have like an assistant coach for celebration. There's nobody on staff of the Bears. I looked through kind of the Rolodex there, and the guy doesn't exist. But yeah, there is no way that they're now, since they're succeeding and they're winning, it's not where you're like, hey, maybe you shouldn't spend so much time working on this. But you know how hard it is. You've been a part of, you know, movie sets and all sorts of different performance based things. It's tough to get, you know, a couple people to do the right things, much yes, less like an entire
whole team.
So when they described it, I heard some of the players talk. I was like, I didn't know what was happening. I just started pretending I was playing the flute. I'm not sure if I buy it.
Right.
Because everybody would want to play the flute or the oboe or trumpet.
And right.
Can't have a whole bunch of trumpet section.
No, you don't want all woodwinds.
No.
So that, I mean, the team itself has impressed me in a limited amount of time. Nobody likes to admit when they're wrong, but I believe that I was wrong about this team. They really do seem to know what they're doing, both on the offensive side and the defensive side. It's very impressive to see. I hope they don't break anybody's heart again, but it's sports, so inevitably at some point your heart's going to be broken. I hope it doesn't, but we'll see how it plays out. But I enjoyed myself last night. I really did. I was never rooting against them. I was never rooting for them. I was watching the game, holding my head in my hands on other seasons. But yesterday, I go, these guys seem to know what they're doing.
Well, Bill, it's all about unconditional love. And you know what? That bandwagon, it may have left the station, but you can still get on maybe that commuter flight to Detroit. Get there. There's a seat waiting for you, and you'll be welcomed with open arms.
I actually now, like, I had no intention of watching the game on Thursday, on Thanksgiving. And that's another thing. To make a team play within such a short span of time. They just played last night.
It's almost unfair.
And now four days later, how are they
going to put together, you know, great touchdown celebrations
right.
in this amount of time?
That's my concern.
Did I hear three games in 12 days?
Three games in 12 days. Yeah. Doesn't that seem like a lot? I mean, even if you love football, you say, boy, the wear and tear on these guys' bodies.
I loved ramen noodles, but after like two years in college, I couldn't eat it anymore.
But you're right. Now, this morning, they've got to get all the guys to Hallis Hall and say, okay, we've already done canoe, we've already done band, we've already done team photo. We got to come up with something big. It's Thanksgiving. We're on the national stage. We got to come up with huge ideas.
And that's it. That's part of it, right? I think it's important. And think about just the attention that they're getting for this. You know, and everyone's like, well, what are they going to... Now they've got to top it, right?
Yes.
You have that added pressure.
You always have to top it.
And big ideas, you know, it may be easy to say, but sometimes it's tough to come by. I just hope they're working on it.
Dane,
I hope
for years...
game planning right
now. Right as we speak.
There's got to be some Thanksgiving theme, right?
Oh, yeah, you got to pretend you're
like a pilgrim's
coming over on the Mayflower.
You have to be sensitive to the Native Americans.
You have to be. Now more than ever.
You don't want to do like a turkey hunt?
No. You have to be more sensitive
but,
than that.
But then how do you do it? You know how you do those like shadow animals with your fingers in the right? How do you really like do turkey while
right.
you're in football?
Right. Well, you have one guy strutting around and then you have guys sneaking up on him with muskets.
And if they were to wear the orange uniforms again, they could be gorged. I don't think they'll do that.
They won't. I don't know. Will they? Maybe. It's possible.
Maybe they just pile on it and they be the contents of the Horn of Plenty.
Oh, that's it.
There you go.
That's, now you have it. All right, we'll take a quick break. If you'd like to speak to us, you can. We're at 312-981-7200. Spill left. It's Dane Neal in for Wendy, and it's WGN. Spill left. It's Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will be back next week. I will be back next week. This is my last show before Thanksgiving. So get your grievances in now. This is your last chance.
Stuff the suggestion box.
Right. You know, celebration-wise, I was always impressed by the Lambeau Leap. This is when a Green Bay Packer would score a touchdown in Green Bay. They never did that on the road, right? You have to be in Green Bay for this.
Well, if there
did
were...
Did they do it on the road?
If, let's say, there were fans, a group of fans, so you knew that it was a safe landing.
Yeah.
Right? Occasionally, they would throw themselves in there, but typically, right. And plus, the walls are different. You know,
yeah.
If it's a very high wall, it's more difficult.
You can't jump up you can't scale a 30-foot wall.
Yeah, you can't.
So a Green Bay Packer, upon scoring a touchdown or making a great play, usually the touchdown, would run back toward the... past the goal post into the crowd and jump up, and then the crowd would catch them.
Yeah, it was
very impressive.
It was. Even,
that's all it took to impress me. Is, well, look, a guy jumped in the air and somebody caught him. That's pretty impressive.
We've been talking, kind of extolling the virtues of, you know, real thought process on the production side of the celebration, whether you're hiding props like under the goalpost, right, or whether you've got it all planned out, who's going to do what. Some of the best ones are just, you know, kind of spur of the moment, you know, just epiphanies, right?
Yeah.
So Leroy Butler with the Green Bay Packers, he was the one who came up with it.
Is he the king of this?
The godfather of the Lambeau leap. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
I think he intercepted a pass, ran in, and just decided maybe the momentum was, you know, he didn't want to hit the wall. There was some puffy jackets up there, and he jumped in, and the rest is history.
And it's not like a foul ball in baseball, whereas if a fan catches you, a football player, you don't get to keep that player, right? They don't have that rule.
They don't, and I think they used to even make you give the ball back. You know,
did they?
Well, I think back in the...
Because the NFL's not making any money, let's be honest.
They're expensive.
You got to make sure that the balls are returned safely.
Yeah, right. And you need them, right? How many do you have on hand? You don't want to run out.
Well, you got the nets behind the goalposts, right?
Right. Yep. So the balls don't go into the crowd.
I still think from whether you're the agent that's hoping to cash in on that next contract of the other guy, or you're the team hoping the guy continue to play, is that this is an unnecessary risk.
It is, isn't it?
Right. It's like, why don't I do like a bungee jump? When it's like, well, because you could die and then we won't let,
right,
you won't be able to play.
Right. All right, now here's something I want to do that I've promised myself I wouldn't do. This is twice in a week I have a story about either Kim or Kanye, Kim Kardashian or Kanye West. In this case, they're both in the story. I did one last week, too, and I was mad at myself because I get mad at people in the media. I always say they're only famous because people in the media continue to say their names and tell you stories.
You're
and
part
now for
of
the second week in the row, I am part. Yeah, I am a big part of the problem. This time, the story is, as you all know, California has just been devastated by wildfires, right? That's been in the news. It's a horrible, horrible story. The death count keeps going up. You see footage of it on the news, and it's horrendous when you watch this. Everything people own just going up in smoke. So Kim and Kanye are being criticized because they have a mansion out there in California valued at somewhere in the neighborhood of $60 million.
That's a lot of mansion.
That's a big... Even by mansion standards,
absolutely right,
your $60 million mansion is a pretty good-sized mansion. So they're being criticized because in the midst of all these wildfires where there's just devastation in all directions, they hired a private team of firefighters to come and put out the smoke and put out the fires at their mansion. And people are saying, well, why is that fair? Just because people have more money, why does that give them the right to bring in their own team of firefighters? That shouldn't be. But I'm somewhere in the middle on that. Should that be or should that not be allowed?
Oh, I don't know how you could not allow it. You know, especially, you know, if you could put up a fence, you could put up a security system, you can put up whatever kind of means it is to keep
your
stuff safe, right? And this is a unique situation, and I think it's part of it because you know it's just been so widespread. You're seeing not only, you know, houses burn here and there, people dying, the devastation in the forest, but you're seeing entire towns. And it's happening so fast. This isn't a hurricane where they say, hey, you've got like 3 days, why don't you get out? And then they show, you know, the guy from the Weather Channel arguing with someone on their porch why they should leave their parrot behind.
Right.
So this is something that's happening really quick. And if you had the means and you decided, well, would you like your house to burn down or not? And if I think that consensus is no, and then you've got the means to hire, bring in a bunch of water. I mean, it's been so hard to stop, but I think part of the reason it's been so tough is it's really overwhelmed, you know, the public services, and I think it's hard to do anyway, but I guess that in their neighborhood, what they did, which was, I think they dug some trenches, I think certainly they had these extra firefighter teams, is it saved like a whole cul-de-sac, or it saved a part of a neighborhood, so it saved other, you know, rich people, too, that didn't even kick in. Maybe they'll
But can you see where, if you were somebody, I mean, very few of us are on their pay scale for whatever, you know, for a myriad of reasons, we're not making Kim and Kanye money. So if you're somebody who's on a lower end or a much lower end of that pay scale and you say, I'm losing everything I have because I don't have the money to defend it, why is that fair that firefighters that could potentially be fighting the fire at my house and helping me keep my things, why do the rich people get to keep their things?
You know, I don't know, but I think there is sort of a whole, and it's not like a black market industry. I think there's like a whole sub industry of, even let's say you got, you know, a relative got kidnapped overseas. There's like mercenaries that you can hire that are former like Navy SEALs that will go over and try to help and solve that problem. I think you're just taking it into your hands instead of just sitting there and saying like, well, whatever's going to happen, I hope they can get to me and save me.
Sure.
To be proactive about it. And you've got to figure that for people that have big ranches or maybe really remote like mountain cabins where it's really hard for like the average fire department.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or maybe it's an all-volunteer fire department anyway, that these things exist, right? And if you can make a call and give them a couple bucks and save your house, I think
then maybe it's worth it.
I don't feel bad about it. I think it's great that it exists. I wish it was available for more people, right?
I see this, that what you just said, that's the heart of this, is that I keep going back and forth going, It is privilege winning out over anything else. You know, they're both very fortunate to be in a position where they can hire these guys. But by the same token, I'm thinking about all the people in the areas, not even just surrounding that house, because my guess is if you got a $60 million mansion, you're in a fairly wealthy community. But go a couple miles away in any direction. If you're one of those people and you've just lost everything or in the process of losing everything, you just say, wow, here's another example of just money being able to buy anything you need.
I mean, it's the way of the world. And so I guess what you should, as opposed to trying to deny them the ability to pay extra to do that,
sure.
Maybe we should all aspire to be able to afford someday our own yes. private fire
let's
force.
Let's look at that as an option. Let's go to the phones. We're 312-981-7200. Emmy, hi, you're on WGN. What's up?
Hi, Bill. I was watching The Talk, and Sharon Osbourne said that she used to live in that area.
Yeah.
And that the insurance company sends the fire truck, that it is less expensive to pay for a fire truck than it is to pay for the bid that they would pull in for a plane.
Wait, say that again. It's less expensive to pay for a fire truck than what?
Than to pay for a claim on that house that it did burn.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. So are you? Yes. So because of that, would you justify it? Would you say that this is fair for Kim and Kanye West to hire their own fighting team?
In a way, I would, yes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's one less thing burning there, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
And less devastation to anything around it.
I guess so. I understand that. Thank you so much, Emmy. Have a great week.
Thank you, too.
Take care. Let me see. Dane, I'm going to try to get one or two in really quickly. Jerry, it's WGN. What do you think about this?
Yeah, well, two things. Retired fireman here.
Yeah.
And I think that if they were paying the municipal fire department to put out their fire and then leave everybody high and dry, that's not good.
No,
but
this
years
is different.
Ago, my grandfather was on the Chicago Fire Insurance Patrols.
Mm-hmm.
And they were funded by the insurance companies. And they ran, they had firehouses the whole shot. And if you didn't have a fire mark on your building, and you can still buy them, they're out there, and sometimes I think you can see them, they would just drive right past your building because you weren't part of the insurance.
Really?
Like a mafia thing, yeah. If you look that up, yeah, there's the fire insurance patrols. And then about in the 60s, the insurance patrols merged with the Chicago Fire Department, so they all became one, you know, because it was the natural thing to do.
Yeah.
Much like the years ago, the Park District Police merged with the Chicago Police.
Wow.
But yeah, it was actually the insurance companies would pay these guys, and if you weren't insured, of course, there was the regular Chicago Fire Department.
Yeah, right.
Wouldn't pass you by. But,
right.
But that's kind of a twist on that. It's not the same thing, but it's a similar thing.
I'd never heard of that. That's amazing. Well, Jerry,
yeah,
thank
I'm
you.
Sure. Okay, well, take care.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
You think about that on the insurance side. You think about what it's going to cost
sure.
them. I mean, this is the kind of the insurance company goes out of the business situation, right? Because the entire town's...
Yeah.
And I think they've come so long or a long way in the advancement for firefighter and firefighting techniques and equipment and all that kind of stuff. And it's just a situation where every single house in the whole town is on fire at the exact same time.
I know. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, but I could see the insurance companies coming up where it would be an extra thing maybe you could buy and it would be offered as opposed
to
them recruiting
extra coverage.
Yep.
We'll take a quick break, get you some news. Steve has the news, and then there's more of us. Bill Leff and Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff. It's Dane Neal. Dane is filling in for Wendy. Wendy will be back next week. Dane, if people want to hear you on the weekends, they can right here on this very radio station, right?
Oh, yeah. So On the Road is 2 till 4, sports permitting, right? We've got a lot of exciting stuff happening on the sports side, but check it out. You know, we talk a little tailgating. We talk a little travel. Certainly, there's some motorsports, some, family road trips, all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah. I always like listening to it on the weekends. It's fun.
I appreciate
that. Very, very good.
Thanks.
I have in my hand a very valuable list, Dane. These are the lists of stores, retail outlets, that will be closed on Thanksgiving. Now, there was a time not long ago where if you were driving over the river and through the woods to your grandmother's house, you would notice that every store was closed. You couldn't find anything open. Sometimes a white hen pantry would be open, sometimes. But that was it. Nothing.
You really did have to, and this isn't like, you know, an apocalyptic situation, like you need 30 days of food and water or whatever, but you really did have to give some thought to, like, what will I need tomorrow,
right,
or maybe even tomorrow and the next day and a half, because, you know, there isn't going to be anything open. Even,
yeah,
you know, the grocery store, the Jewel, certainly you weren't going to be able to go to the hardware store,
right,
or anything. So you really did have to plan ahead. And now, you know, we were just off the air talking about different things that have changed on the kind of the movie side and the comedy side. Just on the life and holiday side, it's completely different. Everything's open, pretty much.
There was, okay, how long ago would this have been? My daughters were maybe 4 or 5, so this is 15, 16 years ago. The Toys R Us in Niles was going to do an experiment where they were going to open up at midnight on Thanksgiving. And I said, I love Toys R Us, but they're making a mistake because nobody's going to be there at midnight on Thanksgiving. Now, keep in mind, this is 15 years ago, right? Well, before it became popular to dash out and do some shopping on Thanksgiving.
To storm a Walmart.
So we drove to my in-laws' house, and we passed that Toys R Us, and I said to my wife, I go, watch it, because there's nobody in front of it now, and when we come back the other way, there's not going to be anybody in front of it either. No one's going to be there at midnight. At midnight on the way back, there were lines all the way down the block to get in at midnight to Toys R Us. Now people go, well, yeah, because you want to go shopping on Thanksgiving. But back then it was unheard of, I thought. I didn't think anyone would do it.
You know, it's kind of a chicken egg situation, because you wonder, is everything closed because there won't be any customers?
Right. Right?
Because everybody's busy doing their whole family thing. No one's
right.
going to show up. Is it closed because, you know, the workforce of those companies are also people who might want to spend time with their family?
Well, that's exactly it. Is people saying, we want people who work for us to know that we care about you and family is so important. So please,
like, everyone would call in sick or try to get that day off. It might
sure.
be hard to staff the place.
Yeah.
So you wonder, Who are the people that are showing up, not only to work, but also to shop?
Yeah.
Are these people that either don't care about the holiday, or is it just kind of it's an extra thing to do, and if people like going there Monday through Friday, they're going to go there on Thanksgiving, too?
You do get paid extra, don't you? You get holiday pay. Most places will give holiday pay if you're working on the holiday.
You should, Bill, but as that holiday time period, and far as the working becomes less of kind of a special situation,
yep.
maybe it'll get to be the point, like, well, we just treat
right.
it like a regular day.
Right, right. Here's the list. These are all stores that will be closed on Thanksgiving, not stores that will be open on Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Do not go to these stores because they are not open for business. Now, some of these we don't have here in Illinois, so I'll leave some out. And some I'm unclear on. Like, I've passed by places that are AC Moore in the past, but I'm not positive what they are. Because Sarah tells me, she's producing today for Jasmine, that they're like arts and crafts stores. They're like Michael's.
Okay.
I know I've passed by them, but I didn't know what they had, so I've never gone in.
So this isn't going to affect you personally.
No, this particular one is not going to ruin my day. Wait a minute. Where am I going to get yarn on Thanksgiving? AC Moore is closed? I need yarn.
Finger
paint. I need it now.
Crepes. Where am I going to go?
Ace Hardware. Ace is the place for the resting hardware man. They will not be open on Thanksgiving.
Really?
Yep, no Ace Hardware.
Are you sure there's any? Because I thought of our franchises. Isn't there like a rogue guy that, like, hey, we're going to...
I think once the business decides something...
Said, yeah, okay.
I do always like when commercials say, at participating McDonald's. Because it means that at McDonald's, they've made a corporate decision, and some McDonald's goes, no, we're not giving you 5 cents off.
Yeah, that's kind of their out. You're like,
yeah.
I demand that you have, you know, the...
Nope,
like,
I will not be participating. American Girl, Dane, closed on Thanksgiving.
Okay. Some of these I don't necessarily... Because you think even on the hardware side, that there's items that, let's say something breaks, right?
Right.
A pipe bursts or something, you need some hardware.
Gotta have somebody.
American Girl, I think you could live without, at least I know I can, for a few hours. But then again, Bill, if people are out kind of doing that whole, like, let's go out shopping.
Right.
You know, you're caught up in the holiday mood. I mean, you can make some bad decisions in an American Girl store.
Tell me about it. There were years when my daughters were younger...
Oh.
That I spent more money on clothes for American Girl dolls than I spent on clothes for myself.
That is no joke. And that's not even an exaggeration.
Not kidding.
And I think that there should be like an American Girl like parent support group, if there isn't already 10, you know, to say like, because I'm just confused by the whole thing, but they've got it down.
One year, Terry gave me a list of things that my daughters wanted from American Girl. And I didn't understand that. Don't buy all of them. It's here's a list. Pick one or two out, and we'll give them to them. I didn't get that. So even by American Girl standards, they were like, "You want more? Yeah, it's on the list. You got to get it."
Aww. that list, you could get your, oh my gosh. Well, here's the thing. We were able to, can't do it anymore because, you know, Eleanor is now 10 and Vivian, she, you know, is a daily communicant at the Church of Knowledge of her older siblings. But we were able to, when Eleanor was maybe like 8, we were able to get her, you know, American Girl, you've heard of it. It's great. It's, mm-hmm. we're talking about it, but maybe a U.S. gal, you know,
a knockoff version.
It looks almost the same, yeah. you know, no one's the wiser.
Yeah.
You can't read yet. Right. So what's the difference?
But they know, don't they? They know it's not real.
We were able to get slide that one by. That one's since fallen out of favor since it's been it's been outed as not an authentic.
Yeah. Apple stores will be closed. You cannot do anything for your Apple computer on Thanksgiving. They will all be closed. This one is upsetting to me because I would go there, Barnes & Noble. Can't go to Barnes & Noble on Thanksgiving.
You think that would be, because you got some downtime, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you're not going to watch the Bears. Maybe you're gonna go back. Because Barnes & Noble is more than just a store. There's, I mean, you got...
It's a meeting place. It's a community meeting place.
You can have some coffee. You could sit down. You can relax. Comfy chairs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I could work on my novel.
You could continue working on your
novel.
And
when I'm at Barnes & Noble, I don't write my own novel. I take a novel from the shelf and then I just copy it.
There's so much...
Change a word or two.
There's so much material to work from, right. you know, and I think you could just cut and paste a lot of stuff there.
Right, yeah. So it's my Twilight series, although I spell it slightly different.
Half cookbook, half home improvement.
Yes, yes. We've got more stores for you. Closed on Thanksgiving. Do not go to any of these because they're closed. We'll take your calls also. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. It's Dane Neal. We're at 312-981-7200. This station, WGN, will be open on Thanksgiving, Dane, so stop in.
For all your listening needs.
For all your listening pleasures and needs. We're at 312-981-7200. I have in my hand the master list of all your biggest stores, your biggest retail outlets that will be closed on Thanksgiving. It used to be, the answer was simple, they're all closed. Don't go anywhere. It's all closed. Now it's changed. A lot of businesses see this as a big money-making opportunity, so they cash in on it. Let's talk to Karen. Hey, Karen? Hold on. Karen, is that you? Nope.
Oh, turn on the...
What?
The phone button.
I know, I'm hitting it. Karen! No? All right, Dane, you'll help out? I told you, I'm not good with the buttons. They've given me too many. No, that one's already pressed. Oh. That's you. There you are. Sorry, Karen. Thanks, Dane. Sorry that took
okay.
so long.
Hi, Bill.
Hi. We've missed Thanksgiving now, Karen. It took me too long to get to your call. You own a smaller store. You're a co-owner of a mom-and-pop shop is what they like to call them. What kind of store is it?
It's a gift store in Oak Park, Illinois.
Yeah. And Thanksgiving means you'll be open or closed?
Oh, absolutely closed. We are closed. Thanksgiving and the 4th of July are two holidays that I think are sacred American holidays, and I'm absolutely closed. And it's a paid holiday for my coworkers.
Oh, wow. That's really good. Are you guys hiring? Because Dane and I are looking for something on the side.
I'm looking to work on Thanksgiving at you as a paid holiday.
What's the name of the store, Karen?
It's Careful Peach Boutique.
Oh, I've seen your store. I've passed by your store. I've never been in there. I got to go in there.
Because they were closed.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. So wait a minute. Why have you been in it? The best store in Oak Park.
I don't know why. I've passed by it, but I've got to go in. What's your specialty there? What's the one thing that you can't keep in stock?
Oh, gosh. I would say at this time of the year, it's the pine candles.
Yeah.
People love the scent
good
of
gift.
The tree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So no Thanksgiving. You're not even considering it. That's a day that the workers need to spend with their families, right?
That is absolutely correct, and I feel the same way about 4th of July, that it's the one holiday that is strictly American, and we need to celebrate this country. So I feel very strongly about that, and I love the ladies and the gentlemen that I work with, and they should have the time off.
Wow, what a nice person. Well, I appreciate the phone call, Karen. Sorry it took me so long to get to you. Let's see how long it takes me to say goodbye. Take
okay,
care.
Well, wait a minute, Bill. I just want to tell you that you and Wendy are two of my favorites. I love listening to you, and I try never to miss you before I go in and work at the shop.
You're so nice. Thanks, Karen. Have a great holiday.
All right. See you
Take
there.
Care. Bye. Boy, wouldn't it be nice to work for her instead of the tyrants you and I work for here
even
at WGN?
Even just 2 days a year.
Even two. I would take
Thanksgiving
that.
And 4th of July.
I would definitely take that. Let me read you a text. Hold on a second. Here's an interesting text from 708. All stores, all caps, all stores should be closed on Thanksgiving or close early. They should go back to opening up at 5 or 6 o'clock on the next morning, Friday. I worked at UPS, and we used to get off Thanksgiving and the day after. for a few years now. They make us work on Friday, and they're probably going to try to start doing some shifts on Thanksgiving. Thank you for helping me keep my job, but some things should never be changed. What do you think?
Well, there's certain things.
They don't deliver on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, certain things just aren't happening. But a lot of the retail stuff, you know, where either that company has decided that, you know, there's a marketplace for it and there's people that want to do it. And then someone is, you know, these people aren't being forced to get up and go to the store.
Yes.
You know, people want to do it sometimes.
Yeah.
Bill, you mentioned that whole kind of start of the Black Friday thing and, you know, having people. It's become a thing now where people, everybody's sort of coordinated to kind of get out there and enjoy themselves.
Let's say, now I have not seen this firsthand, but here's a hypothetical. Let's say that there's a family that has spent the majority of Thanksgiving together, and maybe they're looking forward to an activity. The family could shop together. You guys could find some shop in the area, and everybody could go out at a reasonable hour after you've had your food, your stories.
Paintball.
Paintball would be a good option. That's the best way to get your frustration out. Uncle Nick, I can't stand that guy. Where's my paintball?
Wait till we're in the course.
Yeah. But that could be, I mean, for a lot of families, I bet that's a cool thing, is everybody going out and doing some shopping on Thanksgiving. I bet a lot of families would look forward to that.
I'm sure some do.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right? Bob's Discount Furniture will not be open on Thanksgiving.
All right.
The real Bob and the cartoon version that looks nothing like the real
nothing
Bob.
Nothing like it. It's like the Fountain of Youth, like Toy Bob, and then you've got the real Bob. You would have tried to make them, you know, kind of connect those dots.
They don't even
there.
Look a little bit alike. It's very frustrating. If you're going to get a guy to draw real Bob, get a guy who's better than cartoon.
And you
got to
think there's some sort of big boardroom in a meeting, like, here's our new commercial,
right,
Bob, that he just looks back and says, like, that looks nothing. Like, you know?
No, it's very upsetting. Burlington Coat Factory.
All right. Okay.
Closed on Thanksgiving.
Well, see, this is important. So whatever, if you need, let's say, relatives coming over and you need some extra seating, get it done before.
Yes.
Bob's is closed. And
they will
then
not be open.
If it's cold at all, make sure that you get that coat done.
Yep. Costco will not be open on Thanksgiving. I know a lot of times I need a pallet of mustard and I need it fast. I'll have to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
Crate and Barrel for all your wicker needs. Not open. Dillard's department stores will not be open. Dress Barn. Now, Dress Barn, in parentheses, the majority of the stores, there's a couple of renegade Dress Barns that insist. Yeah. Yes. Yes. They will be open. A place called Gander Outdoors.
Oh, okay. And it's for the people that may not be as familiar, it's kind of like Bass Pro Shops, right?
Oh.
So it's, if you need a canoe, if you need some duck blinds, you know, if you're good. But see, then I could see some people getting out and doing a little bit of hunting and fishing.
Right.
So you'd probably want them to be open.
You would think. Guitar Center, not open on Thanksgiving Day. Very upsetting. H&M, can't go to H&M. Half Price Books will not be open. Even if you offer them more money for the books, they're not buying.
I think that's what you do. I think you pound on that window and you hold up, you shake some cash at
right.
them. Say, I'm going full price.
Right.
Open up.
Now, this one, if I had to bet on a store that would be closed on Thanksgiving, all my money would be on this one. I'll explain. Hobby Lobby. Because isn't that the one that's not even open on Sundays?
Yeah, they're one of those that, you know, just like Chick-fil-A, right, where they've kind of made this statement, this is part of their company policy, is that they're closed on Sundays so that their employees can observe, you know, their, you know, religious situations.
Sure.
So, not that this is a religious day, but yeah, Hobby Lobby, I could see it fits with that whole kind of get with your family
thing. I'm amazed that they have held true to that, because you'd have to think when you're in that business, Sunday would be, if not your busiest day, right up there.
It's one or two. When do people, and this would be the focus group for them, is like, well, when do people have time
right.
to get out and shop? And Sunday is one of those days.
Yes.
And you're closing. I don't know. They do have a kind of a unique selection of things. Maybe people figure it out.
I'm surprised.
But Hobby Lobby, like the day after Christmas, is insane.
People returning stuff or what?
No, it's their wrapping paper. Everything.
Oh.
They have the best wrapping paper.
It's really?
Thick,
yeah,
and everybody, it's all, you know, half price, and all of their decorations are all, you know, half price or sometimes 60 or 70, whatever.
Wow.
The day after Christmas, Hobby Lobby is insane.
Wow.
You can pick cards too.
Any kind of theme, any kind of decor, any kind of holiday, you can walk in there on any day except Sunday of the year, and you can outfit whatever you want. You can set up like a whole photo shoot, you know, based on, you know, Greek revival or whatever you want to do. They got it all. I don't know how they keep all that stuff in there.
And they're really good with framing too.
Of all the things.
Greek revival, Steve. It's very popular.
I'm interested in that, yeah.
It's very popular. And it's not a mandate. Like car dealerships are mandated that they cannot open on Sunday, right? That's still a rule. And again, I always say to myself, but that's when people are off. That's when they're allowed to look for cars. Why wouldn't you open that on a Sunday?
That's kind of the... I'm wondering how that... You know, a lot of these are left open to market forces, right? If people weren't shopping, there wouldn't be open. And I think it'll kind of take care of itself. The car dealer situation...
That's a state law, right? Well, that's not national, is it?
The way I understand that, what that does is that protects cars from the competition, Dane. So if you're a car dealer who wants to be off on Sunday, you could choose to do that. But if the others weren't mandated to be closed, you'd lose business.
Oh, so, yeah.
I don't know if it was the dealership lobby or what.
It had to be.
But I know there have been moves to rescind it from time to time.
Steve, is it statewide or is it national?
It's statewide.
It's only statewide.
I think it happens in other states as well. But
wouldn't you be at a tremendous advantage if you were a border city, if you were somewhere on the Indiana-Illinois border or Wisconsin-Illinois border and you had
Crazy
a car
Larry's
dealership?
Is open
right.
on
We're open. Right?
Right.
Wouldn't that be a huge deal for
There's
them?
Only 2 days I can really shop for a car.
Yeah.
And one of them, they can't sell me a car legally.
Which is why Steve always purchases his cars illegally.
Right.
Illegal.
That's all right.
I go to Rhode Island.
That's okay. Better that way.
I think in this day and age, too, if they've got those commercials, I don't know that I'd ever choose this route, but you can get it from a vending machine, right? Or get your car from our vending machine. Right. Or online. I think there's ways to, if you
get
really
around
want
it,
to shop for a car,
you could probably do it. All right. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. Dane, as per your request, we're playing a lot of disco music on the show today.
It's coming back.
It's going to come back harder than ever, bigger and harder than ever.
Bigger.
The disco music.
Light up floors, bell-bottom jeans, polyester.
Yep. I'm already walking around town with cans of paint, much like Tony Manero did in Saturday Night Fever.
Strutting.
Not just walking, but actually strutting. It feels more comfortable. Your son, Max, is 10 years old?
He just turned 12.
12 years old.
Yeah.
I get my
papers
late.
He's the size of a 10-year-old, if that makes anybody
No, you don't have to. It's my mistake.
He's like a little guy.
He recently got to meet a hero of his. Tell the story. What happened there?
Well, and this is, I think, something that a lot of people can sort of relate to, is that you get an opportunity. You have people you appreciate, whether it's, you know, athletes or movie stars or TV stars or people in your community, even like maybe a politician here and there. And then you get an opportunity to meet him in person after you've already been sort of a fan watching what it is that they do. And you know, Bill, from what you do and certainly, you know, what I do, is we get to meet some people that are, you know, of certain level of notoriety for sure on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah.
And they don't always kind of match up with what their public persona is.
Sometimes you're a little underwhelmed.
And so Maxwell's he's just a tremendously huge fan of the show called The Impractical Jokers.
Oh, right? I've seen that show. I know that show.
It's four friends who compete to embarrass each other. And that's what they do. And they do a hidden camera show. And it's actually
it's been on for about 3 or 4 years.
It's very funny. So he's been watching it since the beginning. We've sort of warmed up to it, like, what are you watching? And then so we enjoy it too, and they had an opportunity. They're doing a tour, and we got a chance to take him to for his birthday when he turned 12. Still, like I said, the size hasn't caught up with the age, and the to go take him down there. And Murr, who's one of the guys, has a book, and this is of interest, and he's a great guest, and we did a road trip, and so it kind of fit in.
Murr, named after
James
one of the
S.
gifts
Murray.
At the nativity scene, wasn't he?
Right, he was like the cousin of frankincense.
Yeah, right.
He was like the lesser known cousin of frankincense, Murr. And so we got a chance to meet him, and so we're there, and over the years, just coming in and recording stuff or sitting in on some of the stuff. Max has met a certain amount of people that I would consider to be
famous. Does he get excited when he's going to meet somebody famous?
Never,
he doesn't.
Never.
He could
care less. There's been times when I've been on with you guys over the years where he's just sitting next to like a Saturday Night cast member that's going to come on with you and Wendy.
Yeah.
And he's just,
and it doesn't do anything to him.
He's just on his tablet. He could care less that he just doesn't, it doesn't faze
him. But don't you think, here's my theory for that, because I've seen that play out with my own daughters and with their friends a lot. I think now, because everything's accessible, like you can make a movie on your phone. So everybody's been on YouTube, and really fame doesn't mean what it used to mean. I think for a kid now, like when we were kids, if you sat by somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody that was famous, that was a highlight. But those days are gone.
Well, also, and Bill, you mentioned it, when there used to only be a handful of channels or less,
right?
Maybe just a palm full of channels.
Right.
You really had to be something in order to be on TV. Now there's hundreds of channels. And so I get it. It's diluted in a bunch of ways. But he was super excited to go ahead and meet him. And I was a little bit worried because it doesn't always go well, right?
Yeah, I know.
You get people that you think are going to be great, and then they come out and they're jerks.
Yeah.
And then it kind of blows your situation. But it worked out great. And Murr was... you know, super friendly and fun. And but he was actually nervous. I'm like, what's wrong? He's like, I'm nervous to meet him. Like,
because he's so used to seeing him on TV, and now he'll be right next to you, talking to you.
And I didn't get it. I was like, why? It's not like you have to do anything. You're just sitting here. You think he's going to be mean to you? And he's like, no, I'm just, you know, because you watch him on TV and he's there in person. And it's just like, okay, I get it. And it worked out really well, but it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah? No. So, have you been disappointed by anybody that you were excited to have on as a guest and then you met him? Or?
Well, it wasn't necessarily a guest situation. I was a fan of Sterling Sharp. Sterling Sharp is a
football player.
Yeah, it was a receiver. He was kind of notoriously grumpy. And
yeah.
Got a chance. It was out at the Pro Bowl. And this was before it was in a position to interview anybody. Really, this was more kid style. And got a chance. I saw him there. And he was with with his wife and a kid. They were pushing a stroller. This was in Honolulu. And I said, wow, that's Sterling Sharp. And so I went up to say hi to him. You know, I told him that I was a fan of him as a receiver. And then I asked him for an autograph. You didn't have selfies back then. You know, you couldn't just like take snap pictures of people.
Right.
You just said, it's like, hey, can I get an autograph?
Right.
And he went on to tell me that he was, that no, number one.
Just easy.
No.
It's no.
And he's
the
like,
no.
I'm on vacation. Is what he said. He was on vacation from being, I guess, whoever he was. I'm like, oh. And my mom, who was with me at the time, was behind me, and she's like, your whole life is a vacation. Which,
nice.
And so from that
That's
point,
fun.
I got this stare. From, you know, and it went all the way from like, hey, wow, I'm excited, look who that is, to like, hey, I'm going to talk to him, to he's going to beat me up. And then, so that didn't go well. So it wasn't even just like, wow, he was less cool than I thought he would be. It was like he was actually a threat to my physical being.
Many years ago, when my daughters were little, you know, this holiday lights parade that they do here in Chicago to usher in the holiday season. They do it down Michigan
Avenue. Oh, yeah, of course. It's huge.
I was at a radio station that had a float, so I was going to be on, and they said, and if family members want to come out and also be on the float, we would love that. That'd be great. So I said, yeah, I think we could pull that off. So then we find out that in the float right in front of us, this is when I was at WLS, which is owned by ABC. So ABC was going to put out a float that had the quote-unquote stars of ABC on the float. One of them was a guy, now the name may be lost to you, but his name is Corbin Blue, and he used to be in all those high school musical shows.
Okay. You know,
like every year or every other year, they would make High School Musical 2, and
get
on
get your
on
head
and
in
on.
The game.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was always the subtitle, right? So we come to find out that Corbin Blue, who is my daughter, both of my daughters' absolute favorite guy in the high school, you know,
okay.
He's going to be on the float. And that float is going to be adjoining our float because we're both ABC properties. So they'll be in front of us. We'll be behind them. So I say to my daughters, do you want to come out, be in the parade? They did. And I said, oh, here's an added bonus. Your friend Corbin Blue will be on the float in front of us. To which they both do that thing where it looks like they're going to pass out. They're both like wobbly, like they can't believe they're going to meet him. So for a week at home, it's, do you think it's okay if we have our picture taken with him? Yeah, you can have your picture. Do you think it's okay if we ask him if there's going to be any more High School Musical? Yeah, you can ask him that. Do you think it'll be okay if we invite him over for that? Yeah, you can invite him over for the holidays. Like every day there was 1,000 questions about Corbin Blue.
You got to block out some time.
Yes.
With Corbin.
So now comes the time where they come over and they say to us, if anybody wants to meet the people from the ABC float, let's do this now. And I look at both girls, and they're scared out of their minds. Whoa. They don't want to see Corbin Blue. So I go, guys, you know how every day this week, every day for the last 2 weeks, you've talked about this? It's now. We get to go. No way. They couldn't go near it. They were hiding on the float.
Wow.
They didn't want him to see them.
Did you at least document it, like, for the record?
No, I didn't know. I mean, I think the best thing to do in that situation is because everybody handles that moment differently. Yeah, yeah. And I thought, I don't want this to be the moment that changes their lives when Daddy forced us to meet one of the stars of High School Musical 3. I didn't want that to happen.
You could just say, like, hey, we'll just see him next time.
Right. You know, I didn't even think about that. I didn't even think about that. But, you know, it went from being, boy, how many more minutes until we meet him until home?
How was the ride home? Was it like, oh, we should have, or we didn't, or did they just never speak?
They so totally moved on from it.
Wow.
I'm the one that was affected by it. Remember the time we almost met him? And now he shows up. Did you ever see those Dr. Pepper commercials where there's a real little guy in the Dr. Pepper commercials? He's that guy.
Oh, yeah.
He plays that guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And they're afraid to look at those. They go hiding. Is that a Dr. Pepper commercial? Yeah. Oh, I don't want to see it.
You want to get him on the best behavior, too. We always joke about it. Esther used to work with SpongeBob, where she, you know, SpongeBob would go on these appearances, and she would work with him, and she was the don't touch the nose girl, because, you know, the costume, the SpongeBob costume is boxy, but it has a big, long,
yeah.
And the kids, they're drawn to it. They would
they
just
want to grab it.
Yeah, and his nose would get all dirty and bent. And then, so, but we had to always protect the SpongeBob, obviously, it's SpongeBob from the kids, but then also the SpongeBob character, I'm not sure why, because he didn't have to do any acrobatic moves, was a chain smoker. So when he would go off stage, you didn't want him to, like, he would be smoking through his SpongeBob costume. You got to protect the kids.
Was that a prerequisite for the job?
I don't know.
It's kind of a tradition in the SpongeBob world that you have to smoke.
Everybody smokes.
Well, it's about, well, more of this in a little bit if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. Dana, quick correction. I said that Corbin Blue, or Cordon Bleu, as I used to call him.
Good school?
Did that to mess with my daughter's heads. Cordon Bleu. It's Corbin Bleu. I said that he was in the Dr. Pepper commercials. I have been corrected. This is accurate. 815 says it's Justin Guarini from American Idol. Yeah,
right.
That's who's the guy in the Dr. Pepper commercials. Now, I apologize.
Was he one of the guys that was one of the original contestants, or was he that guy that wasn't Ryan Seacrest? You know, they had like sort of a co-host situation that first year.
No, that was a guy named Brian Dunkelman.
That's right.
Right?
The footnotes of entertainment.
The first
lore.
Year... Seacrest was not enough for America. We needed more.
You needed more.
So you were treated to the comedy antics of Dunkelman and Seacrest. But I don't know how they decided that, you know, only Ryan Seacrest was needed. We don't need Dunkelman.
Yeah, I don't even remember those shows, so I'm not sure if he wasn't doing, or if it's obvious, like, well, you know, we got to get rid of Dunkelman, you know, if it was one of those things. Or maybe just name-wise, it's less cool, Dunkelman.
Yeah. But he's like the fifth Beatle at this point. He's Pete Best because Seacrest owns everything.
Yeah. He's like the modern day Merv Griffin. If you look at all the different things, he never stops working, owns a bunch of shows.
So much so, not only does he own shows, I was shopping. I needed a belt. This was about a year ago. And belts are all kind of the same. I mean, if you're in the belt industry, forgive me, but they are kind of the same. I mean,
the belt industry is a complete racket, Bill.
You know that.
When you need a belt, you get there and it's like, what? It's $30 for this belt?
Right. They're a little strip of leather and a buckle.
Yeah.
In mine, I get a big Harley Davidson buckle in the middle.
And your rodeo champion. It's got a hole in your rodeo champion buckles. Yes.
Right. And I also, sometimes I wear a utility belt because I'm a big fan of Batman, so I'll wear that. But for a basic belt, you're right. It's $30. It's $40. So I see two or three that are kind of the same, and I go, I'll just take this one. And then I bring it up toward the front, and I look at the brand name on it. It's Ryan Seacrest. He has his own line of belts.
That's when you know you've made it. When it gets distilled, you got your own belts, your own lawn furniture.
Yeah.
You've got a line of cookware. You know that you've
made.
In fact, and I'll tell you, I'm in the same boat with you, is that I think to the James Beard Awards, I had to wear a tuxedo, and I think I wore a Ryan Seacrest bow tie.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got his hands and everything. So are we to believe that while Ryan Seacrest is sitting on set with Kelly Ripa on any given morning, does he have a sketch pad and he's just sketching belts for his belt and bow tie company?
I'm sure he's getting a lot of calls. There's a lot of decisions to be made. Hopefully he can delegate a little bit. But if anybody can handle all
that's
that
where
stuff,
you get Dunkelman. You call Dunkelman up and you go, Brian, are you working? Because I'm so busy right now.
He's like, do you want me to host the show? He's like, no, can you help with the belts?
If you could just come in with some ideas for buckles, that would help me so much, Brian. Please.
We were talking, kind of satellite radio and some other things. And Ryan Seacrest, he hosts a full, like, morning drive show. He does that weekend.
He does the countdown
show.
The one that either Casey Kasem or somebody like, or John Leader used to host years ago.
Shadow Stevens.
Right.
But he also does this, and you got to think production-wise, this is a live 5-day-a-week thing with Kelly. Where does he get the time?
I don't know. He's just one man, the Seacrest.
He owns E Network, or at least part
of it. Does he own E Network?
Yes, he does.
Does he?
I think so.
I didn't know that.
A good part of it, you know.
So he got all this just from not being Brian Dunkelman. Like, as they were saying, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a host by the toe. If it would have landed on Dunkelman, nobody would know who Seacrest was.
Do you really think that that's his whole success is based on that? Maybe Dunkelman would be doing everything?
Yes.
It'll be like,
I'm pretty sure.
Kelly and Dunkelman.
That'd be great. Yeah. I would love that. Since you mentioned Shadow Stevens, because nobody ever does. Sorry, I only knew Shadow Stevens because he used to be on one of the revamped versions of the Hollywood Squares. Oh. Do you remember this?
Well, I remember Hollywood Squares. And those, you know, as a kid watching that show, it was great because you saw, and I love, Bill, I absolutely love the game show network when you're seeing a Gene Rayburn with a 4.5-foot microphone on a stalk.
Mic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. But, you know, Hollywood Squares was one of those where you had some of those, you know, Rodney Allen Ripley would be there.
Rippy.
And then you'd have, you know, like a Paul Lynde. Sure. And then you'd have whoever with a modern.
Well, always Charlie Weaver. Always Wally Cox. Your bigger stars of the era were always on Hollywood Squares. But after the golden years, the Peter Marshall years of Hollywood Squares, they tried to bring it back, and the stars weren't so on board. So you had a guy. So for people who don't know, Shadow Stevens, the name that you just mentioned, was a Los Angeles radio guy, and his name was Shadow Stevens. So when I was doing stand-up, whatever city you're in, you know, they have you do the morning shows to get people to come out to the club. So they tell me you're going to be on, I don't remember what city I was in, but they said you're going to be on with Shadow Stevens. And I go, oh, I watch him on Hollywood Squares. That'll be fun. So then I go to the studio and I walk in and I meet a guy who goes, hey, Bill, Shadow Stevens. And he gives me like the most manly handshake of my life. And I go, you're Shadow Stevens? And he goes, yeah, I am. And I go, oh, because I watch Hollywood Squares and you're not him. And he goes, oh, I'm not that Shadow Stevens. And I go, your name is also Shadow Stevens?
Right.
He tells me that there's a company that comes up with names, cool names for radio DJs, and you buy it. It's a year subscription.
What?
So much like the guy that I saw in Hollywood Squares, this guy, Shadow Stevens, purchased the name, spelled the same, S-H-A-D-O-E,
right,
Stevens. And he goes, yeah, best investment I ever made. He goes, I got this job because of the name. I go, you got this job because of your name, not because of what you do?
He said, do the people at the station know you're not that?
No, he didn't want anyone to know that.
Wow.
But think about that is that, I don't know.
Hi, Brad Pitt.
Not that Brad Pitt. You're not the guy who is it? No, Thelma & Louise Brad Pitt. That's a different Brad Pitt. I bought the name.
Maybe I am, though, if you need a commercial with voiceover.
But think about that is like, how do you even decide how much to charge people to have a name like Shadow Stevens? I would start at like, 50, I don't know, 50 cents a year. I'll give you 50 cents a year for it.
Well, now that you know that the world is open and available, I think you go big, right?
Right.
Why not be George Washington?
Right.
You know, why would you be
Shadow
Stevens?
I'm not that George Washington. You're the father of the country. No, that's a different George Washington.
These teeth aren't wooden, ladies.
Right. All right. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news. You know who's coming by, Dane? Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune will be by after the news. It's Bill Left, Shadow Stevens, and Dane Neal on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
I wish I could be at your family's Thanksgiving banquet as you enter the room to that music.
Traveling minstrel.
Yes.
Oh, the minstrels are not cheap, you know.
No, I mean, minstrels are very expensive.
You got to have live music for a minstrel like that.
It's Thanksgiving.
You could have a boombox.
No, it's not the same.
But
it's the holiday.
It's not the same.
Bring the minstrels in and let them do what they do.
For regular family dinners, I just use every box. But for Thanksgiving, I got to hire
a guy. No, you bring it up a level or a notch.
Yeah, and he's got to bring his good lute, because you got to have a good lute. Right.
Does he stop and do the scroll, hear ye, and then whatever the news of the day?
Now presenting Eric Zorn. Yeah. Zorn.
The only problem is he's got a bunch of really obscure and old diseases.
Oh, he does? Oh, yeah, hate to hear that.
So we can't invite him to sit.
That's horrible. Let's talk a little bit about Thanksgiving, if you wouldn't mind, about your column.
I wouldn't mind. I would not mind to talk about this. What's made me think about this again, I was off last week. I was in Germany.
Mary Schmick filled in for you.
I heard.
Did a great job.
You don't think I don't listen overseas? I know. Yeah. I was listening. I was feeling like this is my Wally Pip moment, man.
Yep.
You know, Zorn was a regular with Bill and Wendy for many years, and then
until
he took a day off, and they never heard from him again.
Yep.
So I was over in Germany visiting my daughter, and she's studying architecture over there, she said, you know, you should really download the Google Translate app for your phone. Are you aware of this?
It exists, but I don't know exactly.
Well, Google Translate, and they've done this for a while. You put in text in a foreign language into Google, and it'll translate it for you into another language.
Instantaneously.
Well, almost, yes, basically instantaneously. It does it, you know, yes, in a second or so.
With incredible accuracy?
I don't know. I don't know the other language. Oh. I guess so.
All right.
But what it has is now, and I didn't realize this, is it has, first of all, it has a camera feature. And so you can take your phone and point it at a menu, that's all in German.
Yeah.
Or like about 20, I don't know how many languages they have, 20, more than 20 languages, I'm sure. You just point it at the menu, and it translates the menu, just looking at your phone, and it's translating the menu.
That's amazing.
It is stunning, like in real time.
Yeah.
And also, you can talk into it, and it'll play then what you've just said in the other language to someone you're talking to. And this was a problem, or this was, I'd say, very useful for us, because the problem we had, I visited some Zorn family shirt-tail relatives in Berlin, and they speak German and Russian and very little English.
Uh-huh.
And I speak English and very little, well, no Russian whatsoever, and a very, very small amount of German. And so we were using this app to converse.
Wow.
And it was I don't know, I try to imagine what that conversation would have been, what that visit would have been like without this.
Impossible.
It would have been just, the sun shines, yes.
Right.
Maybe it will rain. Where is the bathroom? What are the phrases that you learn?
Right.
And, a lot of hand signals.
And shrugs and so on. But this technology is really, I think it's really only beginning.
You know, it reminds me of what you'd see in sci-fi movies of the 50s and 60s, where they go to another planet and they speak into a device and they hold it up and it speaks their language. But it's a reality here on Earth.
It's very much like that. I'm sure that this is, like I said, we're going to look back at this and go like, wow, that was really primitive, because you actually had to wait for it to translate and then play it
right
back. And I'm sure that they're going to develop more synchronous communication.
Oh, sure.
I can talk into my phone, and they'll be able to hear it in their earbuds.
Yeah.
And so we'll be able to have an actual conversation. I was a little frustrated, because the conversations we were having were, I would ask about certain relatives or certain, I'd say like, well, tell me about, this cousin. And
they would
give me an information. I would try to follow up, but it was very slow.
Yeah.
But I can imagine a situation in the not too distant future, we'll be able to have conversations where language will be no barrier at all.
They're already working on a lot of that stuff, and it's just about the mobility and the speed, right? That's what it is. You think about, what the shrugs, and the faces and the hand signals, that's all you really would have had. And
sure.
They're going to have it to the point where I've seen some things where they're going to have either something that you can wear that takes in the sound, or it'll just be an app on your phone, just like anything else. And you'll just hold it up and you'll speak into it, and it'll almost be instantaneous, ideally.
Yeah. It's very close now. And I think some of the problem with that is that speech recognition is not quite as far along as we would hope it to be.
It's way better than maybe it was. But we all know, as we're trying to do text while we're, doing something else, it says crazy things that make no sense.
Right. And all that, again, all that stuff is in its infancy, but it's still amazing.
Don't you imagine, Eric, that at some point they'll figure out a way so that it's played out in your voice? Like, you'll say something into it, and then it'll read it in German, but in your voice.
Oh, I'm sure.
That's got to happen.
Yeah, of course. It's gonna be, until you'll be able to have these conversations and go to these cultures. And really, one of the things that I did when I got back home then is I wrote an email to the woman we stayed with, who was, I think she's my second cousin, and we had these, very short conversations, and I wrote her a very long letter and translated it into Russian, which is her first language, and German her second language, and asking some sort of deep, serious questions about stuff that had happened in the family that was sort of, mysterious.
Yeah. What did you learn?
So nothing yet. She hasn't written back, but I just wrote.
Aren't you anxious?
I just got back on Saturday.
Oh.
So.
Don't you think, Bill, though, wouldn't it be great to have it, like you said, be kind of in your voice, or you could choose the voice? It could be like, everything I said, they would hear it as if I was Robert Goulet,
James Earl Jones is who I would have.
Exactly. Well, you do get thrown off. I know they've got the translation. I don't know if it was the president of Italy or Poland in one of those presidential things, and he's obviously, he's a good speaker for whatever.
Sure.
It was like a high-pitched lady, the one explaining it. It was hard for me to kind of get beyond that.
They have this. You see it with the United Nations, right? All the people are wearing their headphones, and someone is speaking, and it's being translated simultaneously.
Right.
Into all their languages.
Yeah.
We can all have that now. We're all diplomats.
There used to be books. They were paperback books that if you were traveling to a country where the language wasn't familiar to you, part of the book would have phrases.
Where is the bathroom?
Donde está la baña? Yeah. Or sometimes it was just a word. You'd do it word by word, and it would take you 20 minutes to just say, I need to find the airport. It would take you forever.
One of the things I was doing was I was translating into German and then trying to read the German. German's not that hard to read.
Yeah.
So and they were like, again? And because of my German pronunciation.
Have you been there before to Germany?
I have been before, yeah.
Yeah?
So.
What do you think? What do you like it there?
Yeah, I did like it. I was really impressed. You know, Hamburg, the Allies basically destroyed Hamburg in the Second World War, and it's been rebuilt into this incredibly modern city.
Uh-huh.
Most of it is incredibly clean there, except there's graffiti just about everywhere. It's kind of a strange contrast. There's no litter, but a lot of the buildings are tagged.
Cool mural graffiti or
not Banksy stuff. It's more like just gang tags and so on. So it's not.
What's behind that, do you think?
I don't know. That's
the stress is so much on cleanliness. Why is that a factor?
Maybe that's how it comes out.
That's how they rebel.
Maybe I guess so.
It could be. So, but anyway, so I mean, this is all leading to. Years ago, I used to do this column every Thanksgiving. I would sort of remind people about what an incredible time we live in. I mean, the age of miracle and wonder, right? The Paul Simon line, which is, you know, so many ways in which we live and things that we can do are be the envy of people, you know, just 20 years earlier. But you think of the kings and royalty and the richest people in the world of antiquity would be stunned and jealous at all the things
sure.
that we can do and the comforts we have and the, you know, and I would just make long lists of things that this is my shallow Thanksgiving, right? It's like, you know, other people are grateful for family and love, and I'm like happy for
the Uber
flush
app.
Flush toilets and digital photography and stuff like that.
So your rule, because a lot of people do this at Thanksgiving, they go around the table and they say, give us something you're thankful for. And your first inclination is to say, well, all of you, you're my family. It's you, without you, I'm not. I need you.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
But your rule is you cannot mention people.
I say cordless drills and cordless weed whips, no lick stamps. I mean, thank
Eric,
are you kidding
it's
me?
So funny you say that because yesterday, I don't remember exactly how this came up, but one of my daughters found out yesterday that forever you had to lick stamps. I can't remember how it came up, but she said, why would you lick a stamp? And we said, well, that's how you affixed it to the envelope. She goes, no, there's stuff on it. And I go, well, there wasn't always stuff on it.
See, this is Thanksgiving now. This is Thanksgiving at the Left's house now.
Right.
Well, let's start with that.
Stamps.
Oh, Lord, we thank thee for no lick stamps. And you know what else? Forever stamps.
Right.
Now, that is something to be thankful for.
A gift that keeps on giving and giving.
Exactly.
Well, I think part of it.
Do you remember that you have to buy like a 3-cent stamp to add to your 42-cent stamp? It was hell.
Right.
To get around that whole kind of maybe the inconsideration of the self-centered, you know, because you've got to include, I think we're obligated, right, to say it's the family. We're all here. Maybe it's like Wheel of Fortune. You know, they just, instead of having to say it's the RSTNL, you know, those are already like built into it. Of course, it's the family. And now on to the new things.
Yes, right. Yes, all of you, Higgins, give it
your thing.
I always liked on that bonus stamp, like on the big stamp, you go, oh, that's Theodore Roosevelt. I know who that is. Who's on the little stamp? It's Earl Holloman from Police Woman. It was always somebody who's like, what is he going to stamp?
It's because you needed him to fill it, to spend the letter.
Right.
He's going to protect Roosevelt.
Did they send those letters back? Like, if you forgot to add the
return to sender. If you were off on a penny on postage, you got it back. It would come back to you.
I mean, you get the punishment, but doesn't seem like it's like, how about you just bill them?
Just give it to, right.
Like, yeah, bill them, yeah, right.
Right.
Or just come mind. Ring your doorbell. We want a penny.
Give us our penny. We'll take a little break and then more with Eric Zorn next. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about whatever he wants to talk about, and it happens to be Thanksgiving.
Well, it was.
It was.
It was, but I'm bailing out on that.
Are
topic.
You bailing? Yeah.
I'm tired. It's over.
Enough.
Thanksgiving's
Enough
over.
With Thanksgiving.
I've moved on. No, I want to talk. What I want to talk about, last week I was gone and Mary Schmidt came in.
Boy, did she do a nice job, Eric. She was so good.
She's really.
I've heard that a lot.
She is really.
Everyone's
talented.
Talking about
She's
it.
She's got a Pulitzer Prize.
Yep.
You know?
Used to write Brenda Starr.
I like to say I'm Pulitzer eligible.
Oh, that's something. Yeah.
But she wrote a column that you guys talked about, and it really got me thinking. And basically, if you remember, the headline of the column was "The America of My Childhood So Full of Bunk and Bigotry." And she talked about how, you know, the flesh-colored crayon was just pink, and so we just thought that's the color of flesh. And all these other brown and black people, they're not standard. And people, we would tell like Polish jokes. Those were
the most interesting part of that article to me, and our discussion with Mary was that. You don't realize it at the time.
Right.
Was that things are racist or anti-Semitic or sexist.
Or unsafe.
Unsafe. And you just, you don't even blink. You just go, oh, that's.
And people were smoking everywhere.
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 And so the question came up, and having conversations with my family, I was just saying, well, okay, let's flash forward 50 years. Someone in the year, you know, in the 2060s, a columnist is writing about her childhood in the 2010s. What is she going to look back on and go, you know, you folks won't believe this, but my childhood, we had this, and this is, like, horrifying.
Yeah.
The first thing that came to mind was plastics and how we package everything in plastic, and we just use so much and throw away so much plastic. And
right.
I hope that in years to come we will realize just how incredibly wasteful and stupid that was, and we will really limit our use of
we're making plastics. Progress, but it's slow progress.
I think we're making progress, slow progress. I was wondering if you guys had any ideas of things that you think we'll look back on. And
you've got, well, lists of things that you hope you'll be able to look back on. Of course, Max is always, he loves those post-apocalyptic zombie movies, and so hopefully we're not, remember when people weren't like groaning and
didn't glow in the dark. Remember those days?
I think it might be the thing that would be tough is waiting, whether it's waiting for that translation or waiting for music or waiting for, you know, movies or waiting for products to be delivered. You know, we see the dying of the shopping mall now, you know, Amazon. They'll probably have perfected the drone drop off 10 minutes after you order it, kind of thing.
So you'll tell kids like
we used to wait for everything.
We used to have to leave the house and go to the store, or we'd order on this thing called Amazon, which took. Or actually, it'll be like back when America was called America, not Amazon. But we used to have to wait like 2 days,
right?
2 days to get our stuff, and your kids will go like 2 days. What did you do for 2 days?
Well, everyone's attention span has shrunk to the point where even stuff like sending an email now takes people to, I'm not going to have to type out an email. Forget it. That takes forever.
Just talking to
it. Has to be instantaneous for people now.
Yep.
That mine is, boy, this is scary, but I really mean this. The same way this generation now constantly has to have a phone on them at all times. If you lose your phone for 30 seconds now, people are in an absolute panic. You got to be connected at all times. I think the phones will become part of you. I think they'll do something to implant them in your brain, in your hand, somewhere where it's part of you.
Or your eyeglasses. I mean, I know Google Glass, the first iteration of Google Glass was not a success.
Yeah.
But I think part of it was because it kind of looked a little dorky. And it was kind of creepy. But,
right.
But I think the things that we now find creepy, yeah. I should say this, I mean, the idea we all carry around these tracking devices with us, and nobody really thinks it's all that creepy. I mean, your phone is telling your phone provider and who knows who else
where
you are at all times.
Yeah.
I think that level of discomfort is probably going to keep dropping. Like, oh yeah, okay, everybody knows where I am at all times.
Right.
Another question that I have is about guns. And Are we going to say it's unbelievable? We had there were 3 guns for every person in this country, and anyone could buy any gun you wanted. Or are we going to say that it was unbelievable? There was a time when you didn't have to own a gun. You know, where a lot of families didn't have guns.
So you're thinking in the future everyone will just have to be armed to some extent, or maybe we'll be able to look back and say, you know, geez, you know, how we weren't sensible in a lot of different situations, and you have the mass shootings and things like that happen. It could be like the smoking thing, you know, where, you know, we'll be talking about everybody used to smoke on a plane and how crazy that was, to where we'll say, hey, remember when people could just walk into any place with a gun and shoot everybody?
Or remember when you could walk into a school without having to go be strip searched,
right?
You know, or to go through that, you might have to, that
it's
I mean,
true
it's happened. I mean, it happened when they started doing the airlines, right? I mean, 50 years ago you could just walk onto an airplane, then you had to then and, just not too long ago, to get into a sporting event, you get scanned.
Right.
I'm guessing that's going to start happening with
everywhere,
movie theaters, shopping malls, and everywhere you go, you're going to have to be scanned. You have to walk through metal detectors everywhere you go, and people are going to.
And maybe not even places that you are like a destination that you have to go. Just like there's cameras everywhere now.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll just be like random scanners that you're just passing by without even knowing it. Right.
Yeah. I think that's another possibility, and there's certain safety things. I mean, it may be that we'll look back and say it's unbelievable that in the 2010s people were actually driving their own cars.
Yeah,
we actually had human beings behind the wheels of these
right.
cars who were barely right. trained. They were trained when they were in high school and their raging hormones, and then we gave them licenses for the rest of their lives to drive around the streets of the city. And now, of course, they just sit in the car and tell the car where they want to go.
Whenever you see the future in a movie, it's almost always bleak. It's rarely the future in a movie or a television show is rarely an idyllic, beautiful, wonderful place. There's always a lot of problems. Is that accurate, do you think?
You know, I tend to be an optimist about that stuff. I think that, I think it's going to be you know, obviously a mixed bag. People look back really with a lot of fondness at the 50s and 60s. And I think one of the points of Mary's column, it was a little unstated in the column, but which is that when people talk about making America great again, and you look back 50 years ago, was America really all that great?
Well, that's the question I brought up with her was, and people asked this when Donald Trump's slogan became Make America Great Again. When exactly was it great? Give us that period. Tell us that year or decade that it was great. Because no matter how great you think things were, there were always issues. There were always problems.
I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't done all the analysis, but I feel like that it's possible that this decade, that America...
This could be it?
That we are... I mean, obviously, right now, I think our president is a disaster. We've got all kinds of looming problems. But that, you know, do you look back in... When was it better? When was it better for mm-hmm. everybody? And, you know, maybe when the economy was booming in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. But you know, life is so much better in a lot of ways now than so. I mean, it might be now. I mean, we are living in a time of pretty amazing... For most people, safety, security, and health, longevity, all that kind of stuff.
So, and the possibility of a lot of this technology, and there's still opportunity to make those changes to kind of affect things. But what do you think, Eric? Do you think it's going to be zombie apocalypse, or do you think it's going to be like, you know, Soylent Green? You know,
those are my choices.
Those are your choices.
Choose wisely. I'll go with the Soylent, because I'm not sure what it's made of.
That's Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. Read him whenever you get the chance. Good to see you, Eric. Nice. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.